Why Do Bad Things Happen to Good People? The title of the message. We pick up at Esther chapter 6, beginning at verse 14, and we will conclude today in chapter 7, verse 10. And I'm going to be skipping around through there. So rather than read the whole portion, I'm just going to encourage you to follow along as we talk about what's happening in this particular part of the book of Esther. Have you ever noticed that people have many varied, different philosophies about life? I call that a worldview. You know what a worldview is? It's your definition of your view of the world. It's how you see the world. And it's a set of things that you believe to be true or not true. You believe in God, you don't believe in God. You believe in creation, you believe in evolution. You can't believe in both, by the way. You believe in this or you believe in that. Your worldview defines what you believe about the world, and it also defines what you do about what you see in the world. When you see something, you react, and your reaction is largely built upon your worldview. Now, there's an older pastor who was my pastor when I was younger. He, during those formative years, was, I thought he was one of the greatest philosophers I'd ever met. And he used to say things like, don't talk the talk if you're not going to walk the walk. That was one of his favorites, and I sort of adopted that one myself. He also said, if you don't mess with the bull, you won't get the horn. And he said, if you don't want to do the time, don't do the crime. I'm sure you've heard that one before. He had a lot more of those, but I thought I'd throw out a couple of them. And that lets us know that people all over the world, even pastors, have different philosophies and ideas about life, different worldviews sometimes. But the thing we need to realize is that our worldview should come together on the critical things. If we're going to be Christian, then you need to come together on things the Bible says. You cannot be a Christian and do not believe that Christ is the Son of God. You cannot be a Christian if you never ask Christ into your heart and mean it. You can never be a Christian if you've never picked up the Bible and tried to read it. If you can't read, you've never heard it read to you, then how do you know who God is? You see, the fact is, even if you are impaired somehow and haven't been able to read the Bible, you can hear the Bible, or you can have somebody read it to you, somebody share it with you who can communicate its teachings with you. You must have the Bible if you're going to follow Christ. You cannot follow another book. You can't follow Christianity Today or some other Christian-labeled magazine and be a Christian alone. You've got to know what thus saith the Lord, not what thus saith man about the Lord, if you're going to get saved. And that is what the message is about today. The philosophical question we hear over and over again in our godless culture, and I'm going to call it the big question when it comes to Christianity. I hear this all the time. Why do bad things happen to good people? You've heard it many times yourself. It's the big question. Why do bad things happen to good people? That is what's going on in the book of Esther today. You never thought about it that way, did you? Well, that's exactly what's happening in the book. Today we're going to see how all of the bad things that Haman has done and how it finally plays out for him. But we're also going to see the bad things Mordecai did and how differently it plays out for him and why there is a difference between the two. Esther had been preparing, and eventually did, ask for mercy. But she chickened out at the first banquet and asked for a second one. We're going to pick up at the beginning of the second banquet in today's message. Haman was preparing for Mordecai's death. He planned to convince the king to have him impaled on a pole that he had built in his own courtyard, in the king's courtyard. He had already put the pole up just for Mordecai. And his plan was to ask the king to have him impaled. He hated the Jews. He's the one that conned the king into putting that little decree together. You remember that on a certain day of the year, every Jew in the kingdom would be killed. Now, little did Xerxes know that one of those Jews was the woman he married, Esther. Hadassah, her Jewish name, raised by Mordecai, her first cousin, who adopted her when she was a child and raised her to be an adult and walked beside her as much as he could during the process of her becoming queen in the place of Vashti, who, as you remember, Xerxes had excluded, excommunicated from the kingdom because she refused to strut her stuff in front of all his guests. Rightly so, if you ask me. But then along comes Queen Esther. Now look at all the sin that's taking place, and we're going to talk about that as we get through this whole thing. Now, what has happened just before we get to where we pick up today? Haman had been humiliated. You remember the first feast had happened the day before. And during that time, right after it was over with, Xerxes began to ask, who was this person that helped me to thwart the attempt on my life? If you remember, there was a plan to assassinate King Xerxes, and it was Mordecai who told Esther, who told the king, who had it stopped. And Mordecai, you remember, is the same one that Haman wanted to have put to death. You're seeing the whole picture here now. And now we pick up just as the second banquet is beginning to happen. Esther chapter 6, pick up at verse 14. While they were still talking, now they're partying, okay? They're having a good time feasting, and they're still talking. And the king's eunuchs arrived and quickly took Haman to the banquet that Esther has prepared, the second banquet. Remember, Haman is in the courtyard waiting his turn. Not even Haman, the second in command, could burst in where the king was without being invited or brought into the chamber. And so that's what's just happened. Now you remember, as they dined in the evening before, and Esther spent a great deal of time bragging about the wonderful life that Haman had. Wealth, he bragged about his wealth and his power. He'd been humiliated by the king, and he now was back to dinner with Xerxes and Esther. Wow. Can you imagine what it must have been like? This proud and arrogant and wicked man who had done all of this evil has now been humiliated before the king. He didn't humble himself. Now he has been humiliated, if you remember the message when we talked about that. You're either going to humble yourself when you sin and do wrong, or you're eventually going to be humiliated for it. It's one of the two. It's going to happen. You're either going to come clean and humble yourself or not. Haman did not. And he was humiliated as a result of that. Second banquet starts out very similar to the first. Chapter 7, verse 1. So the king and Haman went to Queen Esther's banquet. On this second occasion, while they were drinking wine, the king again said to Esther, "Tell me what you want, Queen Esther." You remember he had asked her that when she came into the courtyard where he was carrying about his normal business and gained his favor but wouldn't tell him what she wanted. Instead, she invited him to the first feast, and at the second feast, he asked her again. And she chickened out again the second time and said, "Let's have one more feast tomorrow night." Determined to tell him, that's what she did eventually. The king has just now said, "Tell me what you want, Queen Esther. What is your request? I will give it to you even if it's up to half of my kingdom." He really did have the favor of Queen Esther. Now, here it comes. Are you ready? You better buckle your seatbelt for this one. Essentially, he was asking, "What can I do for you?" And in Queen Esther answered him in verse 3, "If I have found favor with the king, and if it pleases the king to grant my request, I ask that," you ready? Here's the bombshell, "my life and the lives of my people be spared." You know what she just did? First of all, she asked for the mercy of her people, but she also identified herself as one of them. You got to remember, King Xerxes didn't know she was Jewish. She had hidden her identity, as Mordecai, many years before, had encouraged her to do, and she'd been hiding it all this time. She never mentioned that her real name is Hadassah to King Xerxes. As far as he knew, her only name was Esther, his beautiful wife, who had gained his favor. Do you realize when she said that, she knew that the king was just as likely to pull his sword and run back there and cut her head off as he was to listen to her plea? Let me ask you a question. Have you ever chickened out before? Have you ever thought that if you went through with whatever it was you knew you needed to do, you might die right that moment? Well, Esther did. She knew good and well what might happen if this ticked off the king. He loved to kill people, remember? It wouldn't have been surprising to anyone had she made that request and he screamed, "You're a Jew," and cut her head off. Let's see what really happened. Well, I'd sort of imagine that the party mood in that room that day came to a screeching halt, don't you? I imagine that they'd been drinking wine and eating good food and maybe being waited on hand and foot, and maybe even there was some music playing in the background. You don't really know what happened there. The Bible doesn't tell us, but that's kind of the way they had their parties. So you really need to assume, since this one caught the king's eye so well, they probably did have some of that going on. You know they had the wine and the booze and all that stuff, and you know they had good food, but I'd be willing to bet they had some live entertainment going on there too, don't you think? That's what they did at all the others. No reason to think they wouldn't hear. My people and I are begging for our lives. That's what Esther was saying. We're coming before the king. I'm in their stead asking you, my husband, King Xerxes, spare our lives. You know what? The shock level of this situation might have been like your daughter coming home for Christmas dinner and announcing that she had killed a man at random at a convenience store that very morning so she could go to prison and marry a guy she's never met in person but whom she met and fell in love with while chatting with him on a prison pen pal chat room. Yeah, that shock level describes it pretty well, don't you think? Well, that's about what was happening in this room now. It went from a festive party mode all the way down to that kind of shock as Queen Esther made that request. Suddenly, Esther says, "Me and my people are about to be slaughtered." That's news to the king. Wait a minute. His signet ring is on the order to do it. But you got to remember, he was conned into it. He didn't think any more about that. Xerxes was not the kind of person to dwell on something like that. That wasn't even before him anymore. Haman was the one behind it all. Haman was the one itching to let this happen. And you remember the day before, Haman had done something himself. You remember what he did? Haman had plotted for the death of Mordecai. That's why he set up the pole in the grave, in the courtyard. He was going to convince the king to impale Mordecai on a pole he had set up. Now, let me pause here for just a moment and say that there's a good reason that Esther made the statement in verse 4 that sounds so redundant. Let me read it. "For my people and I have been sold to those who would kill, slaughter, and annihilate us." Kill, slaughter, and annihilate us? How many ways can you be put to death? Kill, slaughter, and annihilate. That's pretty tough, isn't it? She didn't want him to miss that question, don't you see? The whole point was, Esther was trying to make a strong point that we're not only going to be killed or murdered, we're going to be slaughtered, suggesting their innocence in the slaughter. She made a lot of points with that. You know, she could have said something about being sold as slaves, but if that's all there was to it, then she would have remained quiet, because that was no reason to interrupt the king and risk her own life. Everybody knew that happened. So if that was her whole thing, is to release the slaves, well, she's wasting her time, and she knew it. But that wasn't what she was after, and that's not what the Jewish people, along with Mordecai and Esther, quietly fasted and prayed about before she ever started this whole thing. Esther was talking about the genocide of not only herself, but all of her people. That's the kind of thing that has actually happened in our lifetime. You remember Rwanda and Bosnia? It happened on American soil. The Great Indian Massacre of 1622, before the country ever became a nation. Popularly known as the Jamestown Massacre. It's called that many times. It took place in English colony of Virginia in what's now the United States on March 22, 1622. 1622. This is 2022. That's been a while back. But it happened. It was stated, although it was never proven, that the executions were in retaliation to the Indians who had come to Jonestown, Virginia, and killed Englishmen bearing, as they came in, as friends, bearing food and things that they were bringing to the Englishmen, and they ended up taking any of the Englishmen's implements they could find and using those to kill everyone in the village. The Powhatan Indian village, including women and children, were shot in a mass execution. Men, women, and children, the whole entire Indian village. John Smith was the one who had not been in Virginia for sometime around about late 1609 until a year after the massacre. He was the one, even though he was not an eyewitness, that related the account of why they did what they did in American history. Injust, unjust, what the word is there. This is a great example of when people could rightfully ask, why did bad things happen to good people? When we see evil rulers and crooked politicians, I've given a new word to politics. You know what poly is, P-O-L-Y. That's a Latin word for many, and you know what a blood-sucking tick is, don't you? Politics. And we have many of those in government today who are sucking the life out of our country, out of our world, and who are defending big companies that are censoring everything we post on the internet. God help us to wake up and see what's happening. But you know what? Crooked politicians, murderers and thieves, and those who harm children and exploit the innocent, sex traffickers are at an all-time high in this country and around the world, stealing children from their parents or stealing them from grandparents who take them somewhere, stealing a child because of their beauty or because they think this young man's going to grow up to be strong and he'll make a great slave. And after all, there are some sex traffickers these days that want boys as well as girls, and you already know why. It's evil, it's wicked, and our world is falling apart. Well, why doesn't God just zap all these people? Well, think about that for a minute. That's a question we need to answer if we're going to understand what happened in our story today. Why doesn't God just reach down and zap people like Xerxes and Haman and all the wicked people in the world? Why didn't he do it today? Why doesn't he zap all these sex traders and people that run these sex trading operations, selling children for sex to people that want to pay for it? Why in the world doesn't God stop it? I mean, these are innocent children. Why do bad things happen to good people? That's the big question of the day. Well, what would happen if God suddenly destroyed all the people that sinned and did wickedness? People, all the people in prison, goodbye. All the people that God zapped because they'd been violent, goodbye. All the people who had ever been drunk or drug abuse or deadbeat dads who didn't pay child support. How many things can you think of? God zapped them all. End of story. They wake up in hell that day. You know, one day we'd wake up and realize that if that happened, some of the people that got zapped would be some of the very people we were trying to reach for Christ. Some of those people that got zapped could be our parents, our kids, our grandkids, our favorite school teacher. It could be anybody, because God said, you're not perfect. I know something about you nobody else knows. Well, let me ask you a question. What about you? Would you have been zapped? The only people who wouldn't have to worry about that are the people who've never sinned. And you know what the Bible says about that? All have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. And Christ himself, in the parable of the tares and the wheat, tells us why God doesn't just zap those who hate him and those who refuse to serve him. Because when he pulls up the weeds, he destroys the wheat in the process. You see, you and I are so intertwined in a world filled with sin, the only way we're going to be separated from it completely is the day we die. Kind of makes death take on a new perspective, doesn't it? leaving this fleshly body that has been such a problem, that's filled with pain and agony, to be in the presence of God where there is no more sin. 2 Peter 3:9, no, God is being patient for your sake. He does not want anyone to be destroyed, but he wants everyone to repent. You see, that person you're working on trying to help them come to Christ, how many do you think God's working on right now? He's working on everyone that's lost. He's working on everyone that's betrayed him and who's out on prodigal highway right now. He's working on all of the above and then some. You notice that Esther stuck to her original plan when she finally got to it. She, after fasting and praying, and everyone else fasting and praying to receive mercy, she comes to the second banquet and makes the request to the king. You see, when you have a mission that God has given you, and you'll know it because people around you that are close to you, if it's a real serious mission like this one, you're going to know it. Somebody asked me one time, preacher, a young person, I think I'm in love. How do I know if I'm really in love with the right person? I said, oh, you'll know. Oh, that's a standard answer, right? But it's true. You'll know if you'll stop. There's an if. If you'll stop, back away a little bit and pray about it, put it in God's hands and say, God, is this the person you want me to marry? Is this the person you want me to pursue a lifetime with? Most people don't do that before they get married. Most people, we're in love, we get married. I can't tell you how many times I've sat in the pastor's office counseling with a young couple wanting to get married. They're sitting in the same seat. I can still see it. One little chair, and they're both sitting in it. They're all wrapped up. Their eyeglasses are steamed up. They're just all over each other. You want to get married? Why do you get married? Well, we're in love. We're in love. They're kind of steamy looking, you know. And they're, have you got a job? Oh, no, but I'll get one. Where are you living now? I'm living with my mama. What are you going to do when you get married? Oh, we'll move in there for a while, but I'll get us a place. What kind of car you drive? 1968 Rambler. How many miles is on that car? About 400,000. Oh, yeah, and you're going to go to work, and you think you can provide for a wife and maybe even a kid before long? How do you know you're ready to get married? Oh, we just know it because we're so much in love. We just can't live without each other. A year later, same couple sitting in my office, one chair on one side of the room, one chair on the other side of the room, and they're glaring at each other. So you want to get a divorce. Why do you want to get a divorce? I'm trying to help you put your marriage back together. I don't love her anymore. Never did love her to begin with. Oh, I can hear it all. How many things have you heard? I can give you a list of them. The problem is that we didn't really stop and ask God what he thought about the situation. And if we did ask him, we didn't pay any attention to him. That's what happens. It happens too many times. And in this world, it just doesn't matter. Well, let me tell you what's happening, and let's see how we can put all this together. Verse 5 says, who would do such a thing? He's talking about killing all the people. You see how Xerxes forgot about all of it. Who would be so presumptuous as to touch you? Who's going to kill all the Jews with you included in that group? Now the fat's about to hit the fan. I mean, it's going to hit it big time. You better grab hold of something. This one's going to get rough. Verse 6, Esther replied, this wicked Haman is our adversary and our enemy. The Bible says Haman grew pale with fright before the king and queen. He knew he was dead. Haman has been downright rotten through his lifetime. Haman has been mean and rude and arrogant and selfish and deceived the king on multiple occasions and was about to do it again the day before until he ended up being ordered by the king to boast about and to prove the king's loyalty to the man he was going to have killed. Why do you think that your sins will never catch up to you? Isn't that the question of the day? How is it that we think we can just do anything we want to and nobody's going to notice? And they'll never catch up to you or to me. They had the opportunity to go back to Israel. Esther and Mordecai, both, and all the Jews that stayed had the opportunity to go back. They were released when they were supposed to live and worship in Israel, but they stayed behind. Well, that was one little sin. Esther should have never been in a beauty contest that concluded with an audition in the king's bedroom. That's two little sins. Mordecai should have never disrespected the most powerful man under the king, but he did. That's three little sins. How many more sins can you count between Mordecai and Esther throughout the years so far? How many times did Esther have to lie about who she was in order to keep her identity concealed? How many times did Mordecai have to lie to other people who demanded to know he was a Jew? Some people did know. His closest companions knew, as we saw from the assassination attempt that he thwarted. We figured that out at that point. When we review the record, some of these good people who are facing the bad things that we ask in the big question, why do bad things happen to good people? Some of these good things aren't nearly as good as we think they are. You know, we try to call Mordecai and Esther heroes. They did the right thing, finally, but it was because they made the right choice at the right time. But they didn't do all the right things before that. They made the right choice to humble themselves rather than waiting until they were humiliated. On the other hand, Haman and eventually Xerxes would have the same fate, were humiliated. Haman was humiliated right here in today's story, as we're going to see. Galatians 6:8, don't be misled. You cannot mock the justice of God. You'll always harvest what you plant. You'll reap what you sow. Oftentimes we're crying, it's unfair. We need to review our own track record and ask, is there any sin here? Do I have any sin in my life? I had a rude awakening just the other day. I had made some terrible decisions based on some things that happened to us at our ministry at the radio station. I have to make big decisions a lot. That's a common thing for me. And I had made a decision that somebody had done us wrong and I wanted to do something about it. And I started thinking about what I could do about it. I had a dear friend, a man that I haven't known very long, a man that I was speaking to who is in a whole different world than I am. But he's a man that I know, and I shared with him what was going on and asked him for his advice. You want to tell you what he said to me? Brother Ed, as long as I've known you, you've been a man who's encouraged people to follow God. Your encouragement has meant more to me personally than I can ever tell you what it meant. He said, I'm going to tell you what I see. Everything you just told me, I see it as a distraction from what God has called you to do. He couldn't have hit me with a baseball bat and made me feel worse. Because it dawned on me right then, I was wrong. I don't need to retaliate. Remember, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. Vengeance is God's. It's not mine. And I realized I wasn't seeking retaliation. I was seeking vengeance. And it was wrong. I was wrong. I was dead wrong. And I had to repent of it. I'm going to tell you what, the very moment I hung up from him, I promised him I'd do this, and I did. I fell on my knees before God and repented of my sin and thanked God for his presence. But you know, in the past several weeks, I've been saying, boy, the devil's been in our house. I've been saying things like, you know, we had that trip coming back from North Carolina and coming that leg between our station at Jasper and the station at Fort Payne and hit the horse, verse 7, and we moved quickly. Then the king jumped to his feet in a rage, went out into the palace garden, and Haman, however, stayed behind to plead for his life with the queen. He knew the king intended to kill him. In despair, he fell on the couch where Queen Esther was reclining, and just as the king was returning from the palace garden, can you imagine? He fell on the couch where she was laying down. A queen and the king sat on, basically, we'd call them a couch, a sofa, a large chair, if you will. And that's what happened. Haman stays there, and he falls on this couch with the queen, and he's begging her for his life. The king walks in, catches her, and what does he say? Oh, you're going to love this. Will he even assault the queen right here in the palace before my very eyes? Ooh. It's really a miracle at that moment that Xerxes didn't pull his sword and take his head off right where he was. Xerxes was known to do that. But as soon as the king spoke, the attendants covered Haman's face, and that signaled his doom. Now, nobody would have called Haman the good guy, right? Nobody would have said, why do bad things happen to good people like Haman? Nobody would have said that, right? What's the difference in saying that to Mordecai or to Esther? Why do bad things happen to good people? What's the difference in saying that to me about my life or saying that to you about your life? Why do bad things happen to you? Why does God allow bad things? God allows bad things all because of sin. It may not be your sin, but it might be your sin. that caused it. But it's always about sin that does it. Romans chapter 3, verse 10 through 12 says, as the scriptures say, no one is righteous, not even one. No one is truly wise. No one is seeking God. All have turned away because all have become useless. No one does good, not a single one. Every single person who has ever lived has sinned. That simple. Except for Jesus Christ, the Messiah. That means everybody, every single person who has blood flowing through their body has sinned, and they fall short of God's glory. Even our infants are born into sin. They have not committed sin, but they are born into sin. Everybody that's been born since Adam and Eve were born into sin. There is a nature inside of you that Paul talks about repeatedly in the book of Romans. He calls it the flesh. The Greek word is sarx. It means your body. And that's where evil lives. Your body is tainted with sin. It was born into sin. You know what? You can try all you like, but no amount of good that you do will ever make up for all you've done wrong. If you've committed one sin in your whole lifetime, just one, and you spend an entire lifetime, and God grants you with a very long lifetime, you live to be 150, and you never commit another sin, you could never make up for that one. How do you think you can make up for the rest of them? You can't. See, the consequences of every sin that's ever been committed, yours and mine, are all still there. The hurt we've done will never go away. You can be forgiven for your sin, but only God can restore you if you've been hurt by sin. He can hurt you if you've sinned against someone. That's kind of easy to do, isn't it? You can begin to move on. But what about the person you hurt by sin? Some of those people can be healed and restored, and some cannot. Some are dead because you killed them. That consequence never is repairable. Some are maimed for life. You can't repair that. But you can, if God blesses you, restore a relationship between people, and a relationship between you and God can be restored. Part of why God allows trouble in our lives is to keep us away from sin. It's like a warning sign, sin ahead. It's like driving down the road in the car and a little red light that says oil pops on the dashboard. Most of us that know anything about cars call that the idiot light because it doesn't come on until the motor's about burn up. But on the other hand, if it comes on and you ignore it, the consequences of that will come back to haunt you. I think Marie can probably tell you a personal story about doing that once when she was younger. She had an excuse. She was in a bad neighborhood when that light came on, and she kept driving the car, and they lost the engine to the car. And when her father jumped her case about what she had done, she looked at him and she said, well, Dad, you know where I was. I was in this place on this street. Would you rather I have stopped there and gone to one of their houses, knocked on a door and used the phone? Or should I have driven on home? That story ended right there. End of story. Well, you know, you can ignore the light, whether you have good reason or not, but if you keep driving it, you're going to burn the motor up. That's just simple. That's the way that works. And sin acts like that warning light. It gives us a warning that we are in dangerous, very dangerous territory. Now, I conclude today by sharing a story that I heard from a friend who experienced this incident. Here's his story. If you've ever ridden on a bus in Israel, you know that people enter the bus from the front door and pay the driver when they enter. People exiting the bus do so from the back door. But sometimes the crowd is so great that people will enter from the back door and pass their money up to the front to pay the driver. Well, this one time the driver had decided he wasn't going to allow that. He'd been being cheated and all kind of stuff going on. And so he announced that whosoever enters the back door must now get off the bus and walk around, come in the front door, even if you have to wait. Well, he made that announcement, and everybody complied quite grumpily, except for one poor fellow who could barely walk in the first place. He'd had a hard time getting in the back door because the front door was full. And well, the driver stuck to his guns, and he announced to the bus that he would not move this bus till this old guy came around and came in through the front door. Slowly, very slowly, this one little step at a time, this poor old guy got off the bus and walked around and slowly climbed into the front door. All the while, the people on the bus were shouting at the driver to his insensitivity to the old man, but they were also complaining about their wasting his time, doing their time doing this. Finally, the old man managed to make it up through the front door, and he paid the driver. And then he turned around, this old man, turned around toward the bus full of angry people, and he said to them, "Please don't be upset. We should all be grateful that my legs still work at all and that I still have the strength to walk. Thank God for my ability to walk." And I want to wrap up the message with this poem that maybe you've heard it before, but I've added a little bit to it. I asked for strength, and God gave me difficulties in order to make me strong. I asked for wisdom, and God gave me problems to solve. I asked for prosperity, and God gave me brawn and brain and told me to go to work. I asked for courage, and God gave me dangerous situations that I had to overcome. I asked God to give me love, and God gave me troubled people that I could help. I asked him for good health, and God gave me heart disease and cancer, and then he delivered me from both. All of my prayers have been answered. I hope you can say the same. Let's stand for prayer.